Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, looks like they're going to be your views as well, because Bob Chapman, who was supposed to be with us, hasn't called in yet, so, and he's always right on time. So this is going to be Open Line Friday for a change, and give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we'll be glad to talk about what you'd like to talk about, because I have absolutely nothing planned for this evening. Now, I was just, of course, reading the Wall Street Journal before we came out. A fascinating information there. Chrysler is going to lose about $444 million this year. And, of course, we know that General Motors and Ford are losing large sums of money every year. And you just can't keep operating, you know, at a loss indefinitely. Pretty soon, you know, $1 billion here, $1 billion there. Pretty soon you're talking about of real money. And, of course, $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there. You're talking about worthless money. And that's exactly where we're headed today, is nobody will address what the real problem facing our society is today. Everybody wants to talk about how we can spend a lot more money and bail out the current situation. They're talking about $700 billion that they're going to put out. But nobody ever asks, where is the $700 billion coming from? Congressman Ron Paul did ask that. Ben Bernanke, as you know, Congressman Ron Paul is the ranking Republican on the House Banking Committee. And he, when Bernanke appeared before them, why, he asked that question, where is the money coming from? Are you just going to make the money up out of nothing? Isn't that highly inflationary? And Ben Bernanke said, absolutely, it's inflationary. And what the average individual doesn't understand is that there is only perhaps $700 or $800 billion of money, real money, I mean printed money in circulation in the world today. And all the rest of it is simply artificially created by credit, by banking entries. Everything is artificial. It's nebulous. There's nothing there. It's all imaginary. And unless we get back to a solid currency, a gold and silver-backed currency, where the ability to just increase the amount of money that's out there, you know, exists, and they keep increasing and increasing and increasing and increasing the amount of money, and pretty soon we look like Zimbabwe with two and a half million percent a year inflation. Well, our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And give us a call. I would love to hear from you, and we'll talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. But the important issue is nobody is talking about what the real problem is. They're talking about, you know, whether we ought to compensate the executives and how we're going to keep the executives of these companies we're taking over and make large profits. But the real problem is not that. The real problem is we do not have a solvent, solid, logical monetary system as has existed down through the ages. And, of course, right now, of course, they're doing everything they can to avoid addressing the issue. And if we spend $700 billion to bail out the Wall Street, that's just the first installment, because they're probably close to some $5 trillion of debt out there that is faulty. And, of course, the value of homes and of course, other debt keeps falling. Why, there's going to be more and more debt until the whole thing comes cascading down. And it isn't just here in the United States. It's all throughout the world. Well, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to talk on this subject, if you want to talk on another subject, fine. But let's talk about the real issue. It's the financial system that's at fault. Not, of course, the fact that some banks are in trouble. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and right now, of course, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. We've got Jack on the line from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Great, Dr. Stan.
Is our signal coming in there in Michigan?
Oh, it is. Loud and clear tonight.
All right, fine. They had a little trouble a couple of days ago. So, anyway, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, well, the financial fraud and debacle. Every now and then, I listen to George Norrie.
All right.
And he, let's see, I think it was Wednesday night after your show. You know, he comes on at 106, so I flip over to see what is on the agenda there. And this guy, Andrew Gauss.
Right, I know who he is.
Okay, he came on, and he brought up the fact that it would be easy to pay back the original investors of the Federal Reserve Private Corporation, something like $650 million, and then reauthorize the, if necessary, reauthorize the Kennedy Initiative with the silver certificates to restore the constitutionally mandated silver and gold. Well, let's start with silver, right? That would be the easiest thing to do, I guess. But restore that. And then he brought up this thing called the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, and he elucidated the fact that the Treasury Department, I guess every agency of government has a Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. And so turns out Goldman Sachs has something like, he said, 1 or 10 trillion in assets, according to the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, and then in derivatives, something like, 50 or 60 trillion, and he called it derivative rollovers. That's what it was. So I started calling. I forgot to call Rangel and Pelosi. I simply called the U.S. senators of Michigan and the rep in my district for Michigan, and I told them all this. And I said, when they go back to their home districts, they need to start holding town hall meetings, because people like me are out here and we're forming our own grassroots think tanks. And we're going to start holding our own town hall meetings if necessary and convening our own private grand juries to hold you accountable to your fiduciary duties under your charter, the Constitution.
Okay, well, what did they say? Because we're going to have to take a break, but what did they say when you said that?
Dr. Stan, all I can say is they were...
Hold that thought for just a moment. Right now, of course, we have Jack on the line from Michigan. He said he called his local senators and said they better come back to their communities and start holding town hall meetings, because the people were going to start holding them, and eventually they were going to form, you know, grand juries and indict them privately for malfeasance in office. So what did they say when you told them that?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I couldn't have put it better. They sounded shell-shocked, and they were assumed a very, friendly attitude, and said that they would give that absolutely the utmost serious consideration.
All right, fine. Well, I'm glad that you're just getting them shaken up, and I hope you can get people to understand, though, that Gauss is absolutely right. We need to do away with the Federal Reserve System. We need an asset-backed currency so the politicians can keep producing money out of nothing, and the bailout is simply going to increase the inflationary fires within our society. Hey, and thanks very much for calling, Jack, and you keep after them, okay?
And I keep telling everybody about your program every day.
God bless. Thanks. Bye-bye. Let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Do you have a question or comment? We are living in one of the most dramatic, one of the most dangerous, one of the most frightening, one of the most exciting times in all of recorded history. Hi, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
What else can you say after that?
Right.
But I want to talk about this so-called bailout plan.
All right.
You know, I call it the blackmail plan.
All right, right. That's a good title for it, because they're telling us if we don't go along with it, why, the world's going to fall apart. I mean, the sky is going to fall, you know, and certainly we're going to be responsible because we didn't give Mr. Paulson $700 billion to divide up among his Wall Street cronies.
Yeah, well, it seems so far this is being handled almost by what you might call ad hoc committees. They show us pictures and give us names of individuals, but nothing is going on in Congress except that apparently they're trying to hammer out some kind of a bill that meets the requirements of this proposal that the bankers have made.
But, of course, the thing is they're addressing the wrong issue, and the right issue is it's the financial system, it's the Federal Reserve system, it's the fact that we have a fiat-based monetary system and they can increase the amount of money in circulation at any time, and it'll work for a while, just exactly as of course, the $600 checks they sent out earlier this year worked for a while to stimulate the economy, and pretty soon that the effect of that wears off, so now they want to inject more money, and then it was $160 billion earlier this year. They want to inject another $700 billion, and then another $700 billion, and then another trillion, and then another $5 trillion, another $10 trillion. It's not going to work. We need to get back to money that has value. So go ahead, Mike.
Well, what this proposal is, I believe, is nothing less than the, I'll just call them the bankers, the financial controllers of this country, who reside in Manhattan for the most part, or thereabouts, in the Empire State, I like to call it, they have simply submitted to the U.S. government and the people of the United States their requirement for what they want and how they want the country to run. They're asking for, or requiring, or blackmailing us into transforming the Secretary of the Treasury into something that they want. And my idea is that for almost a century now, we've had the Federal Reserve System and a Board of Governors. And this Board of Governors has really been in control of the United States finances. They take money at will, almost, but they've always operated as a board outside of the United States government. What it seems to me now is that with this new Secretary of the Treasury, this transformed position of the Secretary, they end up with their own man on the inside of the government.
What you're really talking about is the conversion of a free society into a fascist society. That's why Henry Paulson was sent from Goldman Sachs to become the Secretary of the Treasury, where he gave up a $38 to $40 million a year salary to take a salary as Secretary of the Treasury of a mere $185,000 a year. He didn't do that because he wanted to help America. He was sent here so that he could take over control of our financial system and, of course, bail out Wall Street. They knew it was coming. They created this whole problem, and they're going to come out, and they're going to get, of course, a lot more money. They're going to convert it into hard assets, something of real value, and leave the American taxpayer, you know, with worthless money. And, of course, they're going to destroy the value of our pension funds, of our savings, of our insurance policies, of our annuities, of our CDs, of our bonds. Everything is going to be destroyed, and the rich are going to get richer and the poor are going to get poorer. But what we need to get back to is constitutional money. People ought to get out the Constitution and read it, specifically Section 8 of Article 1, where it talks about all money will be based upon gold and silver. And, of course, the people like Bernanke and Paulson know exactly what they're doing. And I share your concern, Mike. We're moving towards a fascist America.
Well, like any stage magician who wants to get you looking at his right hand while his left hand is pulling off all the tricks, or his beautiful assistant off to the side who might be running as vice president, they have us looking at this $700 billion. Yeah, it's a lot of zeros. It's a big number. You can't wrap your mind around it. But we try and figure out how did we get this way, and looking at this and looking at that regarding the money and the so-called bailout, when really I think that the big trap, the big deal about this whole proposal, it's only two pages to read. It takes you 5 minutes or less. If you think about it, it might take you six to understand it. But the big deal here is, like I was saying, the transformation of the Department of the Secretary of the Treasury and his responsibilities, the broad powers, and the incredible autonomy that he has. that his decisions and activities may not be reviewed, it says, by any court of law. Any court of law, it says, or any administrative agency. No court of law, no administrative agency. Does that really mean what it looks like it means?
I mean, it means exactly that. It means that he is above the law. The legislature, once they've given him the $700 billion, can't ask him what he did with the money. Certainly no court can review what he's done. He becomes an absolute dictator what he does with his money. And, of course, he's going to reward his cronies. He came from Goldman Sachs. Of course, Goldman Sachs is one of the most powerful financial institutions in our nation, just exactly as Robert Rubin came from Goldman Sachs when Mexico was in trouble some years ago and got us to give some $20 billion loan to Mexico so they could pay back Goldman Sachs. These people are not interested in us. They're not interested in solving the problem. They're interested in profiting up from the problem. And what we need to do is just say no, and we need to use this crisis, and we are in a crisis situation. The whole world financial system is beginning to collapse. We need this to utilize this as an opportunity to reach people across America. And as they're losing their homes, and as they're losing their jobs, and as they're losing their automobiles, and as they're losing the value of their currency, maybe they'll start listening to us and understand that there's something a lot more important than affluence and money, and that's freedom. And well, you can't have a free society when you have fascist people leading us who come from a small clique, which I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, which is energized by dark and sinister spirits or forces that are moving us towards a new world order, towards a world government. They want to destroy Christianity, which is why they took God and prayer out of our schools. They want to establish a new world religion. This is really, these things are moving into our churches, our Christian churches now, our Catholic churches. The church growth movement of Rick Warren's, of course, peace plan and all these other things, they're part of this means of transforming Christianity. And then, of course, lastly, they want to enthrone their leader, who was Satan himself.
Yeah.
And if you doubt that, you need to go to the website of thelucistrust.org and get the material, and they will talk about how their relationship and how they're working with a being called Sanat Kamara, S-A-N-A-T, Kamara. Well, who is Sanat Kamara? It's an anagram for Satan. They worship Satan. They believe he is the true God, and we worship the wrong God. And he will reward them, and he has rewarded them with great wealth and power and fame, but, of course, at the cost of the eternal soul. Go right ahead, Mike.
Well, those who don't understand their history are condemned to repeat it.
Amen. And, let me get our telephone number out one more time. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Did you have anything else you wanted to say before?
Yeah, just a short 7 years ago, we've forgotten so quickly. We had the 911 so-called attacks, the great sleight of hand, the cute little magic trick they pulled on all of us. And we were told to watch out for a mushroom cloud if we didn't get Homeland Security. Now, we hear George Bush talking about how the whole country is going to collapse.
If we don't give him his $700 billion he wants for his buddies.
That's right. And the new Secretary of the Treasury.
Right. Of course, remember,
they want the whole shooting match.
Remember, of course, that he's just doing what he's told to do. It was Dick Cheney, of course, who met with members of Congress and told them that they were going to have to go along with his plan or else. And they put tremendous pressures on the Republicans. Dick Cheney runs the executive branch of government. Certainly the president is simply a figurehead, as so often is the case. As it certainly would be if either John McCain or, of course, Barack Obama becomes elected. They're both associated with the Council on Foreign Relations. John McCain's a longtime member. Joe Biden was a member. Both Barack Obama and John McCain have written articles for the Council on Foreign Relations publication, addressed the Council on Foreign Relations, and attended their meetings. And you mean to tell me there's a dime's worth of difference between them? Well, one is a little taller and has darker skin, but that's about the only difference. They're both radical liberals. Neither one of them are going to get our troops out of Iraq, because, of course, the whole idea is to keep our troops there permanently. That's why we are paying for the war over there. Iraq is accumulating money, and we're putting out $10 billion a month just to keep our military there and system some of them getting killed. Hey, we're going to have to run. If you want to call in later, Mike, that's fine.
Okay, yeah, I'd love to spend another minute or two on this.
All right, fine. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you hang on the line and let me talk to Carlos, and then if we don't have anybody else, we'll talk to you. How's that?
Okay.
Our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call. We'd love to talk to you. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Carlos waiting patiently on the line from Southern California. Carlos, how are you doing?
Hey, very well, Dr. Stan. Well, I'm learning quite a bit and listening to your speaker there and yourself. And I just want to say a few things along the same topics, the economy. You know, I work as a realtor, and I've been telling my fellow realtors for years now that this collapse was going to be coming and that it was engineered deliberately by the Federal Reserve Board and the financial elite on top. And, you know, many of them secretly behind me were saying that I was crazy. And lately, my boss and several others have come to me and said, you know what, we're scared. We're beginning to believe you now. Now that they saw Indy Mac Holdings, Washington Mutual, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, so on and so on, they are scared. And believe me, our sales have dropped tremendously, Dr. Stan. Our office used to have 160 realtors. Now we're down to 60. And we're still surviving. Many offices have closed. And that's because of the, of course, the collapse of the economy. But you know, I read several times in the past couple of years, I've read reports where they show these banks that have invested in derivatives. Bank of America is among the top, as well as Wells Fargo. Bank of America, I think, has some like $90 trillion in derivatives. Well, Fargo's way up there, as well as J.P. Morgan.
Right. I think J.P. Morgan has
a few of these banks, but eventually these banks are going to fall too, and these are some of the big ones here.
Right, right.
So they're going to come back again. With next time, it's going to be a $1 trillion bailout.
Well, $2 trillion, and then $2 trillion, and then $5 trillion, as long as the American public will go along with that. And anybody who votes, any congressman or senator who votes for the bailout should be retired in November. Just let them know that you're going to remember how they vote in November. And I'll tell you, that is the one thing the congressmen fear more than anything, is the fact that people are going to remember how they vote and vote them out of office. They like it there. You know, it's great. You get great prestige, and of course you have lots of money, and you have $100,000, a couple $100,000 to pay on your staff and travel expenses, and great medical insurance, and a great income, and a great retirement. They don't want to give that up. And we've got to let them know they're going to lose it, and they should lose it, you know, if they vote in favor of this. The solution to the problem is get back to solid currency, to an asset-backed currency, and without that, there is no solution, period.
Exactly, yes, yes, but the American public is not aware of that.
Well, you've got to help us get the word out there, Carlos. I know you're doing the best you can, but just keep talking, you know. I was used to say that, you know, a lot of people think we're crazy, but one of these days they're going to be afraid we're not. And I suspect that's exactly what's happening in your real estate office.
Yes, they're starting to wake up. And I got my own internet program, which I'd like to invite you one of these days, Dr. Stan, on a Friday at 12 noon, if you ever have time, maybe in a couple of weeks. I've got an internet program that I do also.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're doing it. I'm glad you're getting the word out there, Carlos. I appreciate everything you do. Carlos, of course, calls in very, very frequently when our programs in Southern California, when we do programs there in Las Vegas. So I recognize his voice, and I recognize his efforts to save America.
Well, Dr. Stan, I got something else here. The real ID, the SB60, just passed here is Schwarzenegger's desk for signature. I believe it's still there.
Well, I hope people will call the governor and tell him not to sign the Real ID Act under any circumstances. This is another infringement upon our freedom.
But you know where this is
headed.
Hold that thought. A national ID, and eventually we're all going to be microchipped and tied to a computer. Hello, are you there, Dr. Smith?
Yeah, we'll go right ahead.
Yeah.
Carlos
okay,
is concerned about the Real ID Act, which is on Schwarzenegger's desk. And while we're so concerned about the state budget here in California, while we're so concerned about the financial crisis that threatens our economic system and certainly the whole economy of the world, they want to sneak through this Real ID Act so that everybody will have to have an identity card. And, of course, this is simply a stepping stone towards the mark of the beast, where you'll neither buy nor sell lets you be known by, unless you be known by the number of the beast, or, you know, have the mark of the beast to be known by the number of his name. This is what it's all about. And people just can't believe that these biblical prophecies could have any application today. But, you know, the longer I live, the more convinced I am that this whole thing is planned out by the prince of this world literally thousands of years ago, and we happen to be living at this exciting time when it's all coming to pass. Go ahead, Carlos.
Well, what I'm afraid of is this thing is going to progress to a national ID, and then once we're microchipped, we're going to be tied in. Our brains are going to be tied in, I believe, to a world computer, and in essence, we're going to be part of a world brain, one collective brain. Devoid, we're going to be, we're not going to have any capability of making our own choices, having our own thoughts, because we're going to be controlled by technology. To the extent that our thoughts are going to be controlled, it's like having an artificial intelligence, and I would think that's the ultimate control of people, when you can no longer think your own thoughts.
Well, I would like to suggest that our listeners go up on my website, RadioLiberty.com, scroll down to the area on other videos, and we've actually posted there. It was Aaron Russo's interview with Nick Rockefeller, I think it is. And of course, you know, this is one of the leaders of the elite, and Aaron Russo, a good patriot, asked him what the goal was. And he said to have everybody chipped. And then if you didn't go along with them, they'd turn off your chip and you wouldn't be able to buy anything anywhere in the world. It's a fascinating interview, and so I suggest you go there. And Aaron Russo is telling somebody, I believe, from Prison Planet, you know, about his experience, talking with one of the Rockefellers, who's one of course, the leaders, one of the people who really control the world. Anything else you want, Carlos, before we let you go?
No, that's good for now, Dr. Stan. Thanks a lot for listening to me, and keep up the good work.
We will. Thank you very much. And don't get discouraged. You just keep telling people what's going on, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank
you. God bless. Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Ron, who's calling from Washington. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I don't know what happened to Bob Chapman tonight, but this gives me an opportunity to talk to those of you who are out there in the audience right now. Hi, Ron. How are things up in Washington?
I think it's fine. I just wanted to make a comment and kind of modify Everett Jerkson's quote when he said, billion here, a billion there, before you know you're talking real money.
Right. That's pretty good. But we've modified that, you know. A trillion here, a trillion there, pretty soon you're talking about worthless money.
That's right. That's what I was going to say, because it'll be quadrillion pretty soon.
Right.
So you beat me to the punch.
Okay,
Dr.
go ahead. I'm sorry. You go ahead. I should have told you.
You're there pretty soon. You're talking worthless money.
Right.
Phony money.
And people have to understand that there is nothing behind our money other than the integrity of, and the honesty of George Bush. Well, of course, George Bush is just a figurehead.
There's
nothing.
Phony.
I know, right? He simply does what he's told to do, as do most of our presidents. If they don't, why, of course, they end up like John Kennedy.
Well, to me, if you get three hots and a cot, like the Marine Corps used to recruit people during the Depression, three hots and a cot, and I'm happy.
Okay, well, our job is, of course, Ron, to get people to think. And this is why I do what I do 5 hours a day. And I hope you get a lot of the people up there in Washington listening to us. You know, we have an afternoon program there from 4 to 5 in the Spokane area. And, of course, we have our evening program there as well. And we'll be broadcasting some of they'll be broadcasting some of our programs on the weekend. So we've got at least eastern Washington pretty well covered. If we had that good coverage throughout America, I think we could save the country. We've just got to get people to understand the true nature of the spiritual forces which are working behind the scenes, which are energizing these evil people.
Well, I hope that if the people of the United States were honest and had integrity themselves and were not materialistic and selfish, I think we could get out of this. It'll be tough, but we could do it.
Well, we can, of course, get out of it, but everybody's going to have to suffer. But we're going to have to get back to an asset-backed monetary system, an honest monetary system, where the bankers can't create money out of nothing and then charge people interest on it. That's what it's all about. And, of course, this is the devil's own monetary system. It's all an illusion. And yet, of course, as long as people really believe money has value, it will have value. They've got to understand the truth. Say our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And hang on there just for a moment, Ron. We'll be right with you there. Oh, this is Dr. Stan. Ron, do you have anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Yeah, Dr. Stan?
Yep.
Yeah, you keep up the good work. I didn't want to stay on the phone and monopolize.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much. We'll let you go. And right now, let's go back to Mike here for a moment. Mike, you want to make a couple of more points before we let you go? Once again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
I'll keep it as quick as I can. This opening statement in this proposal says that the secretary is authorized to purchase and make commitments to purchase on terms and conditions as determined by the secretary mortgage-related assets from any financial institution having its headquarters in the United States. Well, now I'm asking, now they got their headquarters in the United States. Suppose their operations are overseas. And the money starts going overseas. Okay, just enough on that one. I want to skip down halfway down the page. He has the power to designate financial institutions as financial agents of the government, and they shall perform all such reasonable duties related to the act as financial agents of the government as may be required of them. Well, now, suppose this Secretary of the Treasury decides to designate Goldman Sachs as a financial institution.
Well, the law says it right clear. I mean, nobody can challenge that. No court can question it. I mean, he can do whatever he wants to, and you can't say anything what he does with the money. It's the closest thing to fascism I've ever seen.
Really,
and, of course, this whole idea is to enrich his buddies. This is what it's about. This is not to help the individual. It's to bail out Wall Street and to enrich them. And that's what's so important, Mike. And I really appreciate you bringing out those issues. What else would you like to bring up before we let you go? Because we've got a couple of other callers.
Well, those are the clear points. The rest, there's a lot else. It really takes too much discussion.
Why don't you go ahead and email that to me, would you?
Well, I sent it to you yesterday. I hope you'll post it on your website so people can get it.
All right, fine. Well, I pulled it down and just haven't had a chance to look at it. But thanks very much,
okay,
Mike.
Okay, thanks a lot.
God bless. And right now we've got Colonel Terry calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Colonel. How are you doing?
My first call to you, but I heard your program driving home, and I thought I must indicate some of my perspectives, which are relevant.
All right. Are you retired? Are you retired military or what?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead.
I spent many years also in Washington, D.C., Pentagon perspective, but also working with three White House administrations, not always voluntarily on my part. But I must tell you, the corruption I observed, especially in the U.S. Congress, among both parties, is almost total and complete.
Right.
Miss Pelosi, for example, has her family receive grants that Cheney has coordinated that her family's businesses are not entitled to or eligible for.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Right now we have Colonel Terry from Santa Cruz, and he was apparently in Washington, D.C. for a lot of time. He's talking about the corruption he witnessed in the Pentagon and Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House. And what were you going to say about Nancy?
Well, the corruption I witnessed in both parties in the Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, it's almost universal. They have their wives and spouses employed by lobbyists. They have their sons and daughters employed at salaries they couldn't come close to earning if they weren't getting basically bribery through the family in this from lobbyists and corporate executives. The Bush administration is clearly going to be the most corrupt, incompetent, and damaging in our history. Bush-Cheney maladministration. But the Clintons were also foully corrupt. The $110 million they've reported in income is nothing more than bribes paid after the fact. I observed Bill Clinton sell us out to the oil companies, sell us out to foreign sheiks, sell us out to the Chinese entrepreneurs, etc. equally corrupt.
You're talking about 110, that the,
110 million.
I think we said
they've made after he was president for
right. $110 million he made there
in just
a couple of years.
It's mostly bribes, clearly.
Right.
And I could document the evidence if ever asked to.
I have
but
no
the
question.
Point is,
you're
it's
right.
It's foul. It's D.C. is so foul. Both the Republicans and the Democrats. Let's take McCain, for example, who I used to really like and respect. I worked on his 2000 campaign. I am aghast at his defending his deregulation history, which led us to this. I am aghast at his moving Ms. Palin. She is unqualified, unfit to come anywhere close to being vice president. And if he were in the Navy and selected someone even outside the Navy to be his deputy commander or executive officer on a battleship even, he'd be thrown out of the Navy. I'm just terribly disappointed and distressed at McCain's lack of honor and lack of concern for the country just to get votes.
But not the man
I knew in 2000, but again, the corruption is just so complete. Both parties, which was the point I really wanted to call about.
All right, I certainly would not disagree with you in one little bit. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts everyone in Congress and everyone, you know, in the executive branch of government, and even some of those in the legislative branch of government.
I think you would agree with me. We can only fix it with term limits, cutting out contributions, and total transparency of the finances, so we have citizen legislators who serve for a brief period to focus on what's best for the country, not what is best for themselves and their family.
Well, Chris, I believe that the solution is to hold people to the oath they take when they go into office, and that is to support the Constitution and abide by its rules and regulations. If they don't, they ought to be tried. In fact, some of these people ought to be hung.
Would you agree with me, sir, that George Bush and Cheney have broken that oath?
Oh, of course they have, but then so did Bill Clinton.
But who got them elected? What idiotic Republican Party nominated George Bush?
You have to understand that the people who really run the situation, I hope you keep listening to our program, Colonel, because I will begin to introduce you to the fact that there is an elite of runners, and basically what they do is they control the process, you know, when they have, of course, the nomination conventions. That's where they pick people like George Bush, and we've got a choice between a George Bush, who's a member of a secret society called Skull and Bones, and John Kerry, who's a member of a secret society called Skull and Bones, and both of them say the society is so secret they can't discuss about. And if you get into the background of it, when they are inducted into the society, they take an oath to Lucifer. Little wonder we're having problems. Yes, of course, the people who nominated them put them into the presidency, and of course they even control the political process. I think that John Kerry probably won the election. They just rigged the election.
Mm-hmm.
What we need are honest people, and I hope you'll be listening to our program and helping us get the word out.
Okay, well,
I agree with everything you've said.
Who would you vote for?
Well, I tell you what, I'm not going to vote for either one of them. Does that answer your question? I can't tell you who I'm going to vote for, but I'm going to follow Ron Paul's lead, okay?
Okay, fair enough. We'll keep up the good work on your program.
I will. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. And our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And let's go to Mark, who's calling. Mark is calling from Florence, Oregon. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Dr. Stan, how you doing?
Good to have you with us.
Thank you, sir. I can sure understand Colonel Terry's rather distressed because, you know, he thought John McCain was, John McCain is just an example of the whole power structure, which is corrupt, of course, but he certainly serves that structure.
Right.
There's at least one book that's been put out, and I've got it in my notebook somewhere if you want me to hang on and I can give it to your producer. You may well be aware of it. But it goes over the whole Vietnam military history of John McCain. And
well, is that the one that Ted Sapley has just recently written?
You know, I'm not well aware enough of even the author. It's been a good while since I transcribed that in the notebook. I got that over some program information.
Well, there's a man named Ted Sapley who, of course, was a prisoner of war himself, and he has an organization trying to expose John McCain's betrayal of the other men when he was there. And of course, the fact he went over to the North Vietnamese, he actually embraced these people. He did propaganda film broadcast for them. He got special treatment. He got a special woman there to provide for his needs. Ted Sapley heads a group of veterans who hate John McCain because he betrayed not only the fellow servicemen when he was there, but he made sure that none of the other 1,000 or so men who were over there came home. He headed, of course, the Senate investigation in 1991 of the POWs and made sure the others didn't come home. And if you go to Vietnam today, you'll find out, who do you think the Vietnamese are rooting for to become our president?
Well, probably...
John McCain.
Oh, really? He's got them fooled, too. Huh?
Yeah, that's right. So anything, go ahead.
So, Dr. Stan, I think he was at the Hanoi Hilton, but it was the one in downtown Hanoi.
I think so. Right. With all the frills in it.
That's true. That's where he was interrogated at. But basically, as far as the Army, what I mainly called in about was in the Army Times. This was on Alex Jones' show at armytimes.com. It goes over the actual deployment on October 1st of troops, American troops, which are fresh from Iraq for a very large, the majority of them, as I understand it so far, and are war-hardened, so to speak, and what I think to be a very dangerous way relative to the civilian population in this country, because they're being charged with coming over, and they call these the Raiders Brigades, and I guess there's 8,000 to 10,000 men in a brigade, and I'm not sure how many brigades they're going to have spread out over the whole lower 48 here. And probably at the rate this outfit is going at the top, they'll probably have them in Alaska and Hawaii, too, before long.
I think for our listeners, they have to understand what they're doing is deploying American troops, battle-hardened from Iraq, here in the United States to control our population, in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act, but they did away with the Posse Comitatus Act when they passed the Military Commission Act and the other legislation in October of 2006, and now they can use the troops, American troops, against American citizens, which they haven't been able to do. Going back to about 1870, in the 1870s, they passed the Posse Comitatus Act. And even Senator Patrick Leahy, who's a radical leftist, said, this is the most dangerous legislation ever passed. The average individual doesn't know it. I don't know, Mark, if you've actually heard my talk on the planned police state or got the syllabus.
Yeah, you and Alex Jones have filled me in very well over the years.
Right. Well, anyway, this is such vitally important information. I share your concern. Yeah. They know there's going to be civil unrest here as this whole economic
system. Well, they're saying right now, due to the economic forecast, near future forecast, looking at where we're at now on an economic level, and of course, as you well know, and I think even most people in this country realize now, this economic situation has come on so hard and fast that anybody with half a brain knows that it's been planned for a long time to happen this way.
Right, that's right. And that's why, of course, they did away the bankruptcy laws there a couple of years ago, they remodeled them. That's why they sent Henry Paulson from Goldman Sachs, where he was making $40 million a year to become the Secretary of the Treasury at a paltry $185,000 a year salary. He didn't do this for patriotism. He was there, of course, the move towards fascism here, and of course, we move towards a corporate socialist state.
Absolutely.
Share your concern.
I appreciate it, Dr. Stan.
All right, God bless you, and thanks very much for calling.
God bless you, sir. Thank you.
Let's go to Tony's calling from Spokane. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Tony, how are you doing?
Oh, good. There's a good story on Joyce Riley's website, or one of the websites she's on, the Power Hour.
Right, that's Joyce Riley.
Yeah, or Power Hour News. And there's a very good story on there about that. It's one brigade that's being stationed, I believe, in Georgia.
Right.
But she goes into a lot of detail about that and about how it was in the Army Times, as well as Alex Jones. But there's also, it's not just on Alex Jones.
Okay, I think that, Joyce is usually very, 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 very discerning, and I found through the years she's been very, very accurate in the things she's posted. She doesn't put things up simply because it's a rumor that's out there. So, certainly, I appreciate your calling us, letting us know about it. Anything else you want to say, Tony?
I wanted to talk about this bailout a little bit.
All right, fine.
I thought Bob Chapman was going to be on. I wanted to ask him what his opinion was of something, because I think I understand what's going on this bailout. And if I'm correct, taking even a trillion or two isn't going to do any good at all whatsoever. Because it seems that what the problem is not really with the subprime mortgages. And I never really thought that it was, because when people were able to go in and buy a house and just say put nothing down, and they would have to buy mortgage insurance, and they would have to pay so much a month for the mortgage insurance. So I could never really understand how, like, Washington Mutual could lose because the people are paying mortgage insurance. And so it just didn't really make a whole lot of sense. I never did really buy that. And
this is all planned. This is a long-term plan. And as you said, if you go back and recognize and remember what Alan Greenspan was saying, he was telling people to buy homes they couldn't afford, to take out these arm of the alternate rate and mortgage, in so that basically, they could raise the rates on them to rates they couldn't afford. You could buy a house with nothing down. You could buy a house, you might even get $25,000 back on it. You could buy a house and not have to make any payments on the interest or on the principal. I mean, they obviously knew what they were doing. They wanted to precipitate this crisis at this time in history. Once you understand that, it all begins to make sense.
Well, I think the real problem here, as far as there is a problem, but it's not to deal with the mortgages. I think that's just something they conjured up to blame, so they could have, blame it on the American people.
You're absolutely right.
But it's what they call credit default swaps. And
now, these are derivatives. This is what Warren Buffett referred to as, financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent, potentially lethal, and now we've reached the lethal state.
Right. But see, there's a difference between a credit default swap and a derivative.
Right.
And it took me a long time to understand what this was all about, and I finally think I put it all together. Now, a derivative is basically you might call it an options contract.
It's basically an insurance policy that people are going to pay what they said they were going to pay. So if you wanted to buy a bond, you would take a derivative contract or a credit default swap out on it. And, if in case the person who had issued the bond didn't make the interest payments or didn't want to pay back the principal, then you would get it from the people who issued the derivative or the credit default swap.
Right, but if Bob Chapman comes on later, I'd like you maybe to ask him this.
We'll see if we can get him on next week.
Okay, because, what I've kind of put together here is that the derivatives, and I got this from the GATA, G-A-T-A website, or the Gold Action Committee Against Manipulation, or I forget their total name. But in 2006, they put out a report that at that time, the largest growth in the derivatives market was in gold contracts. And just to make it real simple, I think that really what's happening here is that there's not so much of a crisis. It's a crisis that's being brought on by the high price that gold has reached, because they have been selling derivatives and selling so much gold and silver that doesn't exist short, that from what I can make out, it's probably about 40-45%, according to the GATA figures that are 2 years old, of the total derivatives market.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tony, why don't we wait till we get Bob Chapman on here, and he can probably explain it. I suspect that every CDS is a derivative, and not every derivative is a CDS, but we'll get Bob on here. But certainly this is a large part of what we're going, because we're talking derivatives about three quarters of a quadrillion dollars. That's
right.
A lot of money. Quadrillion
right.
Here, quadrillion there. Pretty soon you're talking about worthless money. Hey, thanks so much for calling us. Anything else you want to say, Tony, before I let you go?
Well, only that the big fear here that's going on in Congress in this bailout is that there are certain price points to where these credit default swaps kick in, to where it is an insurance policy against price drops or price raises or the price going up, to where they actually have to pay off on these policies.
Right.
And what they're scared to death of is that those price points have almost been reached.
And in some places they have been reached, and that's why
they're
in
and that is the huge problem. Basically, what they're trying to do is build a huge cash reserve, it appears to me, and get the American people to give a total blank check so that they're not going to have to pay off on these contracts that they've written.
But you see, there isn't three-quarters of $1 trillion in the world, $250 billion in the world, so it's not going to work. Thanks, Tony. Let's go to Daniel, colleague from Spokane. Daniel, do you have a quick question or comment?
Kind of both.
Okay, go right ahead.
Well, yesterday I was listening to a radio news and...
Speak up just a little louder, please.
I was listening to radio news yesterday, and a senator came out and said, we want to help bail out the banking corporations and to keep other entities strong.
Right.
So I'm looking at this comment, I go, okay, entities. So I'm thinking, entities, he could be talking about different corporations, but there's always more than one way to look at a word.
Right.
So if we're looking at the word entity, what can that mean? I mean, that can mean a spiritual force.
Well, of course, I think when he's talking about banking entities, he's talking about banks and financial institutions and investment banks. But basically, he doesn't really want to let the American people know he's going to be bailing out the people who've been providing funds for him for a long period of time. It is not the function of government to actually bail out financial institutions. The International Monetary Fund, under American domination, has told other countries, third world countries, you get into financial problems, do not try to bail out your financial institutions. Let them go down. And, of course, that's what the market system is. And instead of taking our own advice, why we're going to try to bail out the very, very wealthy people who have been making tremendous immorally profits, you know, here on the off the backs of the people, and I think we ought to let them go down. Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Daniel from Spokane. Well, Daniel, do you have a remark before I let you go?
Well, I just had one other real quick thing. Was earlier I heard you talking about the Liberty incident,
right?
And how that Israel had a part in that,
right?
You know, but every day you hear these candidates talking about, oh, we got to keep supporting Israel and Israel and Israel.
It's like, well, you have to understand, of course, that the whole issue of the liberty being destroyed by Israel is simply part of the basis of modern-day anti-Semitism. And I think what happened was terrible, but it involved not only the Israeli leaders, it involved the leaders in Washington, D.C., including the President of the United States at that time, LBJ. I do not think we should be financing Israel all the time. I don't think we should be financing Egypt all the time. Really, good Israeli patriots don't want American money coming over there because that allows us to control Israel. And the most confusing thing is most people think that Israel or the Zionists control Washington, D.C. No, the Satanists control Washington, D.C., and the Satanists control Israel. And when you understand that, why what happened to the Liberty, USS Liberty, is quite understandable.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Stan, because, you know, when I was hearing you talk about the Liberty earlier, I sounded like you were breaking down a little bit, and, you know, I think we all should be breaking down on a lot of things.
I think that was a very, very powerful program. I hated to see the manifestations of antagonism towards the Jewish people, which is really what it was, but I can understand why Phil would have felt as strongly as he did, because, of course, he's been accused of being anti-Semitic. This has nothing to do with the Jewish people. It has to do with the wicked people who control the Israeli government at that time and the American government at that time, and those same forces still control both governments today, and as well as most of the governments throughout the world. Anything else you want to say? I've really got to run because we've still got Greg calling from Georgia. Thanks for calling there, Daniel. Let's go to Greg. Hi, Greg. Do you have a quick remark before we let you go?
Yes, sir. I just want to thank you. I ordered a special set from you on the subject of KL007 and Larry McDonald.
Yeah, did you get it?
I sure did, and that was wonderful. And I got interested. I had heard the story a little bit, and I was driving through Atlanta and actually saw the sign where it's I-75 is named Larry McDonald Memorial Highway.
Right.
And I just wanted to find out more about it. It's just blown me away. And during the debate tonight, I thought about something that was in that book by Bert Schlossberg when he talked about the 25,000 or so of our people, of our Americans that are supposedly...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Greg calling from Georgia, and of course, he's got our Larry McDonald special, which includes a four-tape set on what happened to Larry. Of course, chances are he did not die in the crash. He's lingering in the communist jail somewhere, along with all the other Americans who were on the flight and the rest of the people there, that those they haven't killed. And you have to understand that our government was working in concert with the communists on this. They wanted to get rid of Larry McDonald because, of course, he was a very charismatic and effective individual, and he was going to lead one of the anti-communist organizations in this country, perhaps into even helping to take back America and exposing the satanic cartel that runs our government today. Well, anyway, I'm glad you enjoyed enjoyed this material you got from us there, Greg.
Thank you very much, sir.
Well, God bless, and thanks very much for calling.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
And, of course, this is Dr. Stan, incidentally, if you're interested in the Larry McDonald special. We offer the book, the four-tape set, and then the material that came from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and, of course, a rather extensive report on the strange happenings of KAL-007. And, of course, our government worked in concert with the communists to cover up the truth about this, what it was really all about. But people have to understand that it was the American State Department that brought communism to China. And if you doubt that, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or certainly my interview with Professor Sutton on the best enemies money could buy, or a little pamphlet on the Communist-Capitalist Alliance. And, of course, it's taking a phrase from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, pointed out that the United States has funded communism since it began back in 1917, and of course was funding it at the time he gave his speech in 1975. And if you read my little pamphlet, The Communist-Capitalist Alliance, you'll find out that we're funding the communists in Russia right up until a couple of years ago. But of course, we can't let the American people know that. Well, of course, we hope you'll want to go to our webpage, radioliberty.com, and you can get our material there. Certainly you can listen to our DVDs. You can watch our DVDs for nothing and listen to our radio programs for nothing and of course, read our newsletters for nothing. If you'd like to help us, of course, we could certainly use your help, especially in times like these. But we want you to have access to the information. We give you our permission to copy any and all of our information and get it out across America. As long as you're not doing it for profit, we are selling ideas or giving away ideas. Because if we don't educate the American people about the spiritual nature of the battle and the fact that there really are people who worship Lucifer at the highest levels of our government, and of course that you need to get into the Gnostic religion and go up on the internet and look up the Gnostics and understand they worship a different God. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on begins to make sense. Well, let me simply point out that we are having an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area on the 26th of October, and we do hope many of you out there can come. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, beautiful location. We'll be opening the doors at 7:45 or at 8 o'clock in the morning. Program will go to 5:30. We're serving lunch, so you're going to have reservations. Come and bring your friends. We'd like to see a great record. Got a great response so far, and we're really encouraged about the number of people who are coming this time around, and I hope we'll have more than ever before, and I think you'll enjoy it. Of course, we're going to have Joanna Michelson, who was a medium, who was in contact with the beings from the other dimension. The beings from the other dimension. She saw all sorts of true miracles, only they are all demonic. And when she talked to the people involved in those miracles years later, they were all demonically possessed. You need to come and hear Joanna, because you need to hear our good friend Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's going to be here. And then, of course, Pat Wood will be here talking on finances. Pat was very close to Professor Sutton before he died, wrote a couple of books with him. And I think you'll really enjoy, Chris, having an opportunity to hear these speakers. Michael Shaw will be there. I'll be giving a talk. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you can come. And, of course, be sure to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. And if you'd like to get the Larry McDonald special or my book or a talk on the Forbidden Secret, I number 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. This is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful, picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, of course, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, who is the former editor of the New American magazine. At the present time, he's working with the Welch Foundation, does speaking for them, writing for them, keeps up their blog, and of course he does a lot of radio interviews, but we're always proud and pleased to have him with us, especially in times like this, as we're addressing the momentous things and events that are taking place in the world today. William, thank you very much for being with us. Well, we lost William. We lost William. I'm going to ask my producer to get William back on the line again. I don't know what happened, but anyway, if my producer wouldn't mind calling William again, why, we'll go from there. But William Grigg certainly will have a commentary on what's going on. You have to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. And when we hear these people talking, oh, my goodness, you know, should we be concerned about the executives making these all this money and getting a golden parachute, and how we're going to keep the executives of these corporations we're taking over from making a lot of money. But that's not the issue. The issue is not, you know, whether the executives make money or not. Should the United States taxpayers be bailing out these corporations that have really, of course, brought the problems on themselves? Should the taxpayers be having to protect the value of the stockholders in these companies that invest in bad companies and the bonds and the preferential bonds that were issued by these companies? And I don't think we should. And I think that we should let those companies go down. It's the only way, of course, you're going to be able to keep people from doing the same thing over and over again. And, of course, the biggest issue at all, and the one nobody wants to talk about, except Congressman Ron Paul, is we need to get back to a solid financial system. We need to do away with the Federal Reserve System, the central bank. Congress should take a charge of controlling the monetary system in our country, and that way we can hold them responsible. And if they will not do what's right, why, of course, then they ought to be gotten rid of. And if they don't understand what this is all about, they have no business in Congress. This is the same battle that existed at the time of Andrew Jackson, and the battle over the central bank. And Andrew Jackson, President Andrew Jackson, laid his reputation on the line and says it's either me or the bank. You can have me as president and no bank, or you can have a central bank and no Andrew Jackson, and the people rallied behind him. And I believe that people would rally behind any politician today who had the courage to say what this very same thing. In fact, Congressman Ron Paul has and had tremendous support. He got 25% of the vote. I believe it was in Idaho. He probably won a number of states, and they simply did away with the figures. They simply altered the figures. They lied to the people about how people voted. We know, for instance, that he won the majority of the delegates there in Nevada, and they simply held another convention so that Ron Paul didn't win the convention there. These people are not interested in democracy or majority rule. It's all about power, and it's preserving the power elite and the corrupt monetary system. With that, William Grigg, thanks so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, thank you for having me on your program once again.
And especially at this exciting time in history. Go right ahead, William.
It is a terribly exciting time in history, and it's a very dangerous time because, once again, you have a situation where, obviously, there's a very rampant form of political extortion being waged right now in an effort to spread the blame among people on both sides of this very narrow divide between the two establishment parties, or as I like to say, the two retail outlets for the same establishment. The Democrats in Congress have the votes to get this through, but they know that they do not want to absorb the political liabilities that will be handed out after the full weight of this bailout.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead, William.
Yes. The full weight of this bailout will be felt by the American public for generations to come. They know that this so-called bailout, which is nothing more, nothing less than a huge enterprise of corporatism, socialism for the very wealthy, that this is going to ruin the economy. It's going to turn the public against the political class in a way that we haven't seen for generations. And they want to make sure that this is a fully bipartisan measure, which is why on Friday of last week, you had Henry Paulson, who wants to become the first dictator of the global economy. That's nothing more, nothing less than what the original measure would have done. He drafted a very austerely worded 3-page bill that would have put him in charge, basically, of the entire financial sector, the entire investment economy. I don't know the particulars, but I do know that that 3-page bill has now swollen to 42 pages. And I do know that you have this perverse bidding war going on right now, where people are being promised anything that their minds can imagine and anything their debased appetites could desire for their districts in order to get them to vote on behalf of this monstrosity. This is the same process that took place about 3 years ago, or 3.5 years ago, during the debate, such as it was, in the Republican-dominated Congress over the Medicaid benefit, the expansion of Medicaid, as a huge political bribe to the senior citizen vote. Of course, senior citizens are a powerful swing bloc in this country. People age 55 and older do tend to vote, whereas people, say, between the ages of 18 and 35 don't. And so in order to ensure that the Republicans would have a bigger share of that vote, there was this saturnalia of bribery and graft and corruption, and coupled with extortion, that went on until the wee hours of the morning. The vote was kept open in defiance of established congressional procedures that dictated a 15-minute vote recorded by electronic device. That vote was kept out open for hour after hour after interminable hour so that pressure could be brought to bear, blandishments could be offered, and threats could be issued so as to secure a Republican majority in a Republican-dominated House for basically an open-ended spending bill that's going to cost trillions of dollars. That's the same thing that's going on right now. The biggest difference, once again, is the Democrats right now are nominally in control of the House and of the Senate, although you wouldn't know that, so submissive have they been to the Republican White House. But the difference here, of course, is negligible. What they want is, that is to say the Democrats, what they want is to have the Republican Party as visibly inculpated in this grand larceny, this mega larceny, as the Democrats are, so that really you have this...
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with William Grigg. And, of course, we'll be talking about the bailout or the buyout. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and wait a minute, Chris is saying the leaders of the Democrat Party are really solidly behind what President Bush is trying to do. Why would the Democrats be backing a Republican president? Why, very simply, because there's not a dime's worth of difference between the parties. In fact, there are some conservative Republicans there who are opposing the president. And so the Democrats, of course, want to make it appear that this is a Republican bill, and they're just backing it. But, of course, really, it's the Democrat leadership that's behind this. Fortunately, we have a certain number of Democrats who are beginning to worry about this bill because 95% of the public opposes this legislation. We've talked to our own congressional people that are working in his office. We hear this from all across the country. These are the figures that the polls show, as reported by Congressman Ron Paul, that the vast majority, 95% of the people across America, oppose the bailout. And yet, of course, it looks like it's got to go through. Why? Because we don't have a representative government. We have a government that's controlled from above by the people who bribe and threaten and cajole representatives into going along with the establishments, with the financial elite agenda, who have cared nothing at all about the fact that this bailout is going to be highly inflationary and is simply going to rob the average individual of his life savings. But go right ahead, William.
And it's not going to be limited to $700 billion either. That's something we need to point out. This is the down payment on what would amount to basically this huge balloon mortgage, if you will. $700 billion would be one leg. You'd have a huge balloon, and heaven only knows if it would ever go back down in terms of the magnitude of the payouts that would have to ensue. They're talking about going after the underlying bad stratum of toxic mortgage bonds. Nobody knows where they are. Nobody knows what mortgage loans or what package of mortgage loans would be considered toxic. The way that the bonds and the other instruments, the derivatives are structured, is precisely to avoid accountability.
And of course, you know, I think the other thing, William, is that certainly this is not just an American problem.
Yes.
We've exported this to the rest of the world. It was just last week that we gave $0.25 trillion, that's T-Tom, terrible,
yep.
Terrifying $1 trillion to European banks, to the European Central Bank, to the Swiss Central Bank, to the British Central Bank. Are we going to bail out the entire world? What about when China gets into problems and India gets into problems and Japan gets into problems? Are we going to bail them out as well?
Well, they're already getting into problems. I think the markets in Asia are anticipating and in a somewhat preemptive fashion starting to buckle precisely because of the problem you described, Dr. Stan. And this, of course, is the way that it was designed, the way that these unfathomably complicated instruments were designed was to prevent somebody from being able to track a specific line of accountability. It's all designed, of course, to make sure that you have all the credit accruing in one direction and no corresponding accountability. But the problem is, of course, you have to have two signatures every time you have a contract of this sort, when you're selling a bond, when you're marketing a derivative, when you're getting involved in these complex and bizarre and only vaguely understood forms of insurance called credit default swaps. Nobody really knows how these things work, and that's because they were designed in order to be perfectly opaque. Transparency is the last thing these people wanted. In order for a bailout to work, quote-unquote, and we shouldn't want the bailouts to work because we should want people who made the risks to absorb the liabilities. That's one of the fundamental principles of a free market. But in order for a bailout to work, you would have to have transparency. That's exactly what all these instruments were designed to avoid. They're not supposed to be transparent. They're supposed to be profit-generating enterprises, profit-generating instruments, for the benefit of the people who issue them. They're not supposed to be issued for the benefit of the people who buy them, on the assumption that we would always have this huge outpouring of easy money and easy credit coming out of the Federal Reserve. These things were put together at a time when the Federal Reserve was emitting this constant gusher of liquidity. Liquidity, of course, means inflation. And once this became difficult or impossible to sustain, the instruments that were created for that environment go toxic. They go bad. And nobody knows how deep that stratum is. And nobody knows how the so-called bailout would affect the economy in a rippling way that would end up turning some of these otherwise good mortgages bad as people absorb the inflation. That's the other dynamic here, of course, that's not being taken into consideration by people, including some professed free market exponents who say that every once in a generation we have to make an exception and the government has to intervene in a big way. That dim-witted liar Larry Kudlow was saying that on cable television the other day when he was getting nailed flat to the wall by Bernie Sanders, the self-identified socialist independent congressman from Vermont. Bernie Sanders took that man and he nailed his gelatinous hide to the wall, saying that what he was supporting was corporate socialism for the rich, whereas Bernie Sanders at least has the honesty of his convictions to say that he believes in redistributing wealth from the rich to the poor. Of course, it never works that way. Socialism always consolidates power in the hands of the wealthy and powerful, but at least Bernie Sanders is candid enough to admit that he's a consistent socialist, albeit of a far lesser magnitude than Larry Kudlow. But it was just amazing. Kudlow, time and time again, was saying, no, I'm a free market guy, but we believe that maybe every 40 or 50 years, government has to intervene in a very, very big way, including, of course, exercising the power to nationalize and confiscate assets, which, of course, is communism. You had Larry Kudlow arguing on behalf of communism as a supposed free market defender. But these people don't acknowledge that in order to have a free market, people have to be free to fail. And when they are free to fail, they're free to accept the liabilities of their bad choices. And those of us who have not been party to those transactions in a free market system should be free to avoid the liabilities that accrue to those who made those bad choices. But by monetizing all of these bad choices, by nationalizing them, by socializing them, the entire economy would bear the burden. That would, of course, result in a huge uptick in consumer inflation, putting huge pressures on already overstressed households. That would cause another ripple effect that would make another tranche of mortgages go bad, and we'd have to come back for an even bigger bailout. That's inevitable. That is unavoidable if we proceed in the path that these bailout con artists want us to go, which is why, of course, there is this huge, full-throated outcry from what I had believed was a terminally docile population against this act of unfathomably huge larceny. I can't remember which congressman it was, but I think the soundbite of the week was one congressman who said that his mail and his email and faxes and communications from his constituents in his district was running 50-50. 50% saying no, 50% saying, oh, hell no. And that pretty much summarizes the mood of the public. And that's a glorious thing, albeit a somewhat tardy thing. But, hey, I'm simply delighted to find out that there is still a political and moral gag reflex out there on the part of the body politic.
And, you know, I think it's amazing, William, that the majority of the American people know there's something wrong with this solution they're coming up with. I don't think they understand why it's wrong. They don't understand even free market economics. But they realize, of course, Henry Paulson does not represent America. He represents Goldman Sachs. He represents the financial elite. And, of course, the whole idea is for the wealthy to get wealthier. I have nothing against people making money. Yeah. I just want to make it off the back of the American taxpayers.
Well, there's no problem at all with people earning money. The problem I have is with people who make money, and making quote-unquote money is what Ben Bernanke does, and that's what fractional reserve bankers do, is that they are in the business of the Federal Reserve chairman and his oligarchy in generating these fraudulent instruments of debt that they are pleased to call money in a volume that is appropriate to the needs of the banking trust, which is involved in the creation of multiplying the supposed value or the superficial or subjective value of the phony money emitted by the Federal Reserve, and using this as a way of acquiring things that have real value. And it was a glorious spectacle earlier this week to see the most mild-mannered person in perhaps the history of American politics, Dr. Ron Paul from Texas, in the House Banking Committee, very gently but very forcefully owning Ben Bernanke in a conversation, an extended colloquy about what it is that the Federal Reserve does. And he just absolutely, once again, nailed Bernanke's feet to the floor over the subject of the fundamentally fraudulent enterprise that Bernanke is presiding over. And, of course, Bernanke, in a voice that was tremulous with frustrated tension and I think more than a little bit of fear about the fact that he was being exposed so publicly before so many people who were now paying attention for the first time in a long time, was saying, well, Congress delegated to the Federal Reserve the power to create money. And what Ron Paul said is, no, Congress has no constitutional right to delegate that authority to any institution, most particularly an institution like the Fed. And secondly, the Constitution speaks specifically of coining money. That, of course, provokes a lot of people who are supposedly the bien pensant conservatives, the well-spoken, the thoughtful among us, who don't subscribe to such simplistic notions that as the idea that the Constitution actually means what the plain text of the Constitution says. They say, well, why do you talk about coining money? Obviously, we couldn't coin money in a volume adequate to the needs of the industrial, post-industrial society we have right now, which, of course, is the purest nonsense. We have more than adequate means of coining money and regulating the value thereof to be suitable for the needs of an industrial society, or issuing legitimate currency that is fully redeemable in legal money, which is a perfectly valid alternative. The difference is, of course, that we would actually have to have accountability for what the value of money would be. The value of the money would remain stable. You wouldn't have this business cycle of booms and busts. You wouldn't have the Federal Reserve or a central bank similarly constituted with the power to ex-nihilate money, to create it out of nothing for the purposes of a runaway, unconstitutionally huge government. And you wouldn't be able to fund an imperial foreign policy on a hard money system.
And you wouldn't be able to fight wars all over the country that you don't fund. You just simply borrow the paper money, the credit to do that. We're fighting the war over in Iraq. I think we ought to be paying for the war in Iraq. If the public were paying for the war, they'd want to get this war over with.
Exactly.
As long as we can simply pay for it with borrowed money, that's great. That's how they funded Vietnam. And that's why we're in so much trouble today. Right. In fact, so we're going to be back here in just a moment with William Grieg. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, the issue is, are we going to have a solvent money, a constitutional money, or are we going to have funny money? Go right ahead.
You bring up, of course, the indispensable and indissoluble connection between a central bank and an interventionist foreign policy, or as I like to call it, an imperialist foreign policy. And I am convinced, and many other people are convinced, that it was no coincidence at all that the Federal Reserve was inflicted upon our country in 1913 by the same group of people who were scheming to get us involved in a war in Europe that broke out just months later. We didn't get involved until years after that. There were many efforts to get us involved in that war much earlier, but it wasn't, of course, until after the avoidable sinking of the Lusitania, where you had Americans killed because they were aboard a nominally civilian sea liner that was carrying war material through a German-patrolled quarantine zone, that we actually created enough public outrage that we could be manipulated into the war.
And, you know, I think really what the important part is about that story, William, is the fact that the Germans ran ads in newspapers all across America telling them the passengers and Americans not to board the Lusitania.
Yeah.
It was a ship of war, and they were going to be sunk. And these people went to the State Department that reassured them there was absolutely nothing to worry about. You can trust us. We're from the government. We would never send you onto a ship that was going to be sunk. The Germans wouldn't dare do that.
Exactly.
They wanted them to die, just like they wanted the boys on the USS Liberty to die and the people on the Pueblo to die, and the people that they left at the World Trade Center, the people they left in the Murrah Building. There are people who have a different set of values, a different set of rules, and they think nothing at all about human life because they have a different worldview. Because I think they worship a different God. We have to realize, as William is saying, that we would not have had the First World War had we had a solid banking system and would have to pay for the war. But as long as we had a fiat money system, they could simply borrow the money and look forward to some time in the future when it's going to be paid off. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, they have no intention of paying off our debts because there's no way to pay them off today.
Yeah, there's simply no way of doing it. There's not enough real value in anything that we have that could be used as collateral or could be liquidated in order to pay off the debt. But what I really appreciate, Dr. Stan, once again, is that we really help people understand this nexus between fiat money and imperial foreign policy. Dr. Paul loves to harp about this. People now are understanding the wisdom of what he's saying with respect to the need for hard money. For instance, a few days ago, Ron Paul was on with this adolescent blatherskite, Glenn Beck, And Glenn Beck, of course, is somebody who's very much in the orbit of the Republican Party. He calls himself a rodeo clown. I think that he more resembles another phenomenon you'd find associated with rodeos. I won't elaborate upon that. But Glenn Beck was talking with Ron Paul, or actually before Ron Paul came on his program. Glenn Beck felt the need to unbosom himself with a lengthy preface talking about how Ron Paul is right about the economy and right about deficit spending, right about the Federal Reserve, but he's wrong about everything else, meaning, of course, that Ron Paul is supposedly wrong about the war, about the assault on civil liberties, about the phoniness of the conflict in Iraq and Afghanistan, the so-called war on terrorism, and so forth. Well, people don't understand that it's pretty much a package deal. The reason why Ron Paul and a number of us who are philosophically in the same field as Ron Paul, many of us, of course, describe ourselves as paleoconservatives or constitutionalists, or as Ron Paul likes to say, he's a Robert Taft Republican. I call myself a Christian libertarian or a Christian individualist. We all point out that the reason why
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, William Grigg is talking about Ron Paul, his recent interview with Glenn Beck. But go right ahead with the story there.
The reason why Ron Paul and people of us who are philosophically akin to Ron Paul talk about the money issue so passionately is because there is an indissoluble link between that and in the interventionist foreign policy. It's a package deal. You really don't have government start down the road of a fiat currency or a central bank with that type of power unless they intend to get involved in exporting some kind of military aggression to other countries, because generally you have to do this on credit, and it's easier if you control the credit. You know, if you can borrow on terms that are concessionary, or that you have some kind of an entity like the Federal Reserve that simply is in the position of generating as much so-called money as necessary in order to carry out these aggressive foreign policy moves, because there are very few populations in history that are willing to pay the tangible costs of an imperial foreign policy. People just do not find themselves invested in imperial ventures overseas. That was true back in the days of Rome. That was true, unfortunately, as well. You can see in the history of democratic Greece, and you can see what happened in the 18th century, with France and their inflationary policies in the Revolution that ended up creating a huge mess that led to massive bloodshed. You had a civil war breakout in France that claimed probably 750,000 lives at a time when that figure meant a great deal. And, of course, that brought about the dictatorship of Napoleon. Now, ironically enough, Napoleon's the only example I can think of somebody who had a hard money policy and also an imperial foreign policy, but that didn't last very long either. The thing is, our founding fathers, having studied history and having a properly chastened understanding of fallen human nature, created a constitutional republic, two pillars of which were hard money and hard law. The hard law, of course, is the written text of the Constitution, which authorizes the government to do only certain things, and by authorizing those things explicitly, it denies government the power to do anything that is not specifically listed in the Constitution, and one of those specific enumerated powers is the power of Congress to coin money and regulate its value and to use nothing but gold or silver to accomplish that. If you have hard money and hard law, you're creating two of the very valuable prison bars, if you will, that restrain government and keep it from becoming the omnivorous monster that our government has become today. And the thing that I find really interesting about our current financial crisis, Dr. Stan, is the fact that there are countries all over the world whose central banks are, of course, attached to the dollar. They are coupled to the dollar. Who are now talking about decoupling from the dollar, and sometimes they're doing so in ways that are sort of elusive or elliptical. There was a report out of China that was subsequently denied that China's government is about to instruct its central banks to decouple from the dollar. And that, of course, is something that I had anticipated, that you had anticipated and warned about. After a certain point, they'll have no choice. If this measure goes through where the Congress of the United States essentially says, we are now going to start formally monetizing this huge collection of multi-hundred billion and trillion dollar bonds and derivatives. We're going to monetize them. We're going to go generate as many dollars as necessary in order to take these off the books. then the people who are holding dollar-denominated assets overseas are going to have every incentive in the world to start dumping those because they will be worthless. And it may be something as simple as them saying, well, we're not going to have any more of these, thank you. We've had a surfeit. We've had our fill. Well, no, thank you. I think we'll leave now. Or it may be something as dramatic as simply releasing them on the open market and letting their value plummet.
I think it was really so interesting that at the United Nations meeting this last week, and, of course, all the world leaders were there, and all we heard was that Ahmadinejad had been critical of the United States, saying the United States is responsible for the current financial crisis. What nobody says is that literally all of the world leaders, whether it be the leaders of Brazil, everybody else said the United States is responsible for this, and they're not following their own advice. They're telling all the other countries, you know, when you get into a financial problem, the banks have gotten overextended, you're having inflation, you've got to cut back, you've got to get back to a solid financial basis. Why won't the United States take its own advice that's been forcing on us? And I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of these countries are going to abandon the dollar, and of course when that happens, why, heaven help us, because of course all those dollars got to come home, and they're going to destroy the value of our life savings. There's no way to avoid the fact that most people are going to be impoverished before this situation is over, but what we have to do is try to work to get back to a free market economy with a asset-backed currency. Either that, or we will live in a fascist society, which is what the elite want, and I believe that that is the means that they try to get us into the new world order, and of course to destroy Christianity and enthrone their world leader, and that you and I and the others out there are going to have to educate the American people about what's going on. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Will Grieg. This is a very, very important subject. Well, this is Dr. Stan William. Go pick the story up there.
I just love the fact that for the first time in my adult life, at least that I can remember, you have people understanding the fundamental nature of the government that rules us. It's a kleptocracy. That is to say, it is a government ruled by robbers, ruled by thieves. It's involved in nothing more or less than what Frederick Bastiat referred to as institutionalized plunder. That's all our government does. Well, frankly, that's all any government does to a greater or lesser extent, and the founders understood that as one of the reasons why they did everything they could to create a government that was devoted and limited to protection of individual lives and individual freedom and property. And the thing that we have right now is a proposition so uniquely, pungently perverse that finally the public is starting to realize that there is something systemically wrong with our government. When you can have people who are drenched in wealth, and the wealth has been accumulated through means that have no apparent connection to industry or thrift or the improvement of society, who have made huge amounts of money through means that reek of fraudulence, turning to the people who supposedly represent us and saying, okay, we want this huge amount of money to be taken from the taxpayers either directly through force or to be siphoned away through inflation out of the value of what these people earn and save. And it really doesn't take a whole lot of sophistication to understand what's being done and understand why it's wrong. The only sophistication, in the worst sense of that expression, I'm talking about sophistication as in the sophists of ancient Greece, the people used language for the purpose of deception and concealment rather than the purpose of persuasion and instruction. The sophists, of course, would have their hands full and their mouths full in the effort to try to persuade people that larceny of this sort, undisguised, unalloyed theft, is a good thing. And so you have a situation here that a very astute commentator by the name of Bill Huff, he's a fellow who has, he's a Navy veteran, and he has an organization called Jam the Culture, and he's also the proprietor of a website called LexRex.com. He calls this a run on the state. Now, there's an essay of that title, which is on LouRockwell.com, the edition of LouRockwell.com that's dated tomorrow, dated Saturday, the 27th. But you've heard about runs on the bank, and of course that's something which is becoming an increasingly familiar sight now. There has been a slow motion run on the state. People are starting to withdraw from offering their legitimacy to the state.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, William is making the point that we've had runs on the bank. In other words, people are losing confidence in their bank and pulling their money out. But we're seeing something very similar. We're seeing people beginning to lose their confidence in government. And they've realized they can't turn to government to solve their problem. In fact, as I've always said, government cannot solve the problem. Government is the problem because we've turned away from our constitutional form of government towards a fascist government where we have the Ben Bernanke's and the Harry Paulson's, you know, actually controlling the population and stealing from the public to reward their friends at Goldman Sachs and the other major financial institutions who are dedicated not to the preservation of America or our financial system, but its destruction so that they can take us into a world government. And when you understand that, everything going on today makes sense. So pick up the story there, William.
Yeah. It's interesting when we take a look at the way that we got organized as a constitutional confederation back in the 1700s. The reason why people who were colonial Americans decided to do what they did, which was a desperate battle against a globe-straddling empire, really the superpower of its time, was because, in principle, the Parliament of Great Britain, this distant, unaccountable, largely unaccountable body across the Atlantic, was doing many of the same kinds of things that we see our distant, unaccountable body of government in Washington doing with respect to the imposition of this huge corpus of regulations on the day-to-day commerce of Americans and the adulteration of civil liberties protections, the creation, for instance, in colonial America, of admiralty courts to punish people who conducted commerce in ways that didn't permit the king to withdraw his share of what was going on in every transaction. All these things were being done in defiance of the settled and established ancient rights of Englishmen. And so the Americans at the time realized that they weren't being treated like Englishmen. They were being treated like, well, not subjects of His Majesty, but as serfs, as peons, as helots. The helots, of course, were ancient slaves, or slaves in ancient Sparta, against whom the government would declare war every year just to remind the helots of their place in the universe. And the Americans saw that within a generation or two, their children would be living in abject servitude and complete bondage if they didn't act when they did. Now, things hadn't gotten so bad that it was intolerable, but they understood the trend line. They understand the direction things were going. It wasn't going to get any better if they didn't do something to rein in the government that was ruling them. And finally, when it became clear that they couldn't rein in their government, they simply withdrew their allegiance. They withdrew their allegiance, which is the sovereign right of an individual created in God's image. The fact that somebody claims to exercise authority over you does not make that authority legitimate. What makes it legitimate is the consent of the governed. The same type of thing that you see, once again, with respect to the runs on banks. People have invested their earnings in banks. The banks are, of course, part of a system that has been so consummately mismanaged that people have withdrawn their investments from these banks, and this causes banks to topple. Just most recently, the largest bank failure in American history, Washington Mutual Savings and Loan. I've got many, many good friends who had a lot of money in WaMu. I have been begging with them for weeks, if not months, to get their money out of WaMu. As a matter of fact, somebody with whom I conduct regular commerce in buying precious metals, his business has their accounts at Washington Mutual. Well, now they have their accounts in an enterprise that is a hybrid, another fascist enterprise. It's being run by the FDIC and Morgan, J.P. Morgan. And the reason why this has happened is because this bank, like many, many others, has a huge load of these bad, consciously bad, toxic securities that were issued during the real estate and mortgage boom, and that finally became unsustainable, and people withdrew. People found out what direction Washington Mutual's financial directory was heading, and they withdrew their funds, and this brought about, of course, the collapse of Washington Mutual, the biggest bank failure thus far. We've been looking for that to happen for a couple of weeks, and it happened on a Thursday rather than the Friday. Usually we have bank failure Friday. This is bank failure Thursday. But of course, we've had enough drama over the last week or so to last for several months. We're basically seeing the entire system teetering on the brink. But the same thing is happening with respect to the government that rules us. People are finally recognizing that the government doesn't represent us, it rules us. The people who are in Washington, with notable and worthy exceptions, are interested in looking out for our best interests or protecting our rights. They see themselves as the paladins, the champions or defenders of an entrenched oligarchy. And they see that oligarchy now threatening to destroy the value of everything we've earned in order to avoid the consequences of their own corruption. And so we're at a point now where I think some really nasty things are going to start happening. For instance, we have seen in recent weeks a lot of speculation about an Army Times article that appeared last Saturday, I believe, talking about the fact that we now have, as of October 1st, a permanent military unit assigned to Northern Command for the purpose of being a federal response unit under the Department of, it's called a Homeland Security Deployment. It's a Homeland Security tour that's sort of an intermission between rotations abroad to either Iraq or Afghanistan. And this would be a fully liveried, fully appointed combat brigade in, as they say, full battle rattle that would have missions in domestic affairs that would be in support of Homeland Security. I have been talking for several days with people from the Joint Task Force Civilian Support, or JTFCS. I've spoken with three young, very articulate, very sincere public relations officers who have tried to get me in touch with the relevant policymakers to clear up some of my concerns about this. And after two or three days of doing this, turns out all I can get out of them are a couple of very vaguely worded and generalized emails talking about the fact that the people who are deployed to this task force for Homeland Security would be involved only in those missions of a support nature having to do with nuclear, chemical, biological warfare, having to do with the consequences of a natural disaster, or things of that sort. How there's a bright line that would separate them from hands-on involvement in law enforcement or crowd control. As a matter of fact, one of the two information officers I talked with, who's a very pleasant young lady and seems to be a really decent and earnest and patriotic person, she said that, well, the writer for Army Times actually is going to have to go back and rewrite the story because the writer for Army Times had been part of this week or two-week-long training exercise. She's not the author of the Army Times story, as I understand it, is not an active-duty military soldier, but she was there for most of the 2 weeks during the training exercises of this Homeland Security Brigade, if you want to call it that, or battalion, rather, and that she had been embedded with them and she'd seen the training. She had talked about the fact that they would be deployed with non-lethal weaponry, including such things as tasers and beanbags and presumably rubber ammunition and things of this sort.
In other words, what they're being trained for is for control of the populace.
Yes,
of course, the military was never to be used for control of the populace. That was to be the obligation of the police force. They were the ones, of course, were to control the populace. The military was to fight our wars overseas. But they've done away with the Posse Comitatus Act. We're moving towards a militarized police state in the name of protecting us because of the potential civilian unrest, because the people in Washington, D.C. are so afraid we might lose our freedom that they're going to take away our freedom from us.
Right.
People have to understand that this is not imaginary. It's very real. Freedom is lost when good people do nothing. And where is the outcry from our military leaders? Well, the honest military leader has been forced out of the military. They want yes men, the ones who will always obey orders, even if it means killing American civilians. And people say it couldn't happen here. And I would ask, why couldn't it happen here?
Yeah. Well, those are the sorts of questions I was posing when I was trying to find out what's going on. And I was just being given these anodyne assurances that these people would never have a hands-on role in actual crowd control or law enforcement. And I was told, once again, that the author of the story, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, who had been an observer during this two-week training period, had not really gotten the vision, so they were going to have her go through it again and put out a second story for the purpose of trying to clear up a lot of the confusion and assuage the concerns that had arisen as people had read this story. Well, I went back and reread the story, and I posed a couple of questions by email. Here I think is really the poll quote from the piece in Army Times. The 1st BCT, that's the 1st Brigade Combat Team Soldiers, Battalion, 1st Battalion Combat Team Soldiers, also learned how to use the first ever non-lethal package that the Army has fielded. 1st BCT Commander Colonel Roger Clothier said, referring to crowd and traffic control equipment and non-lethal weapons designed to subdue unruly or dangerous individuals without killing them. It's a new modular package of non-lethal capabilities that they're fielding. They've been using pieces of it in Iraq, but this is the first time that these modules were consolidated and this package fielded, and because of this mission we're undertaking, we were the first to get it. The package includes equipment to stand up hasty roadblocks, spike strips for slowing, stopping, or controlling traffic, shields and batons, and beanbag bullets. Now, commenting about this, I pointed out that Colonel Clothier also mentions that he was the first in his brigade to get tasered, which is something that is required of police officers before they are issued tasers and given permission to use them. And then to the information officer, I wrote, "My question is this. The foregoing sounds an awful lot like preparations for hands-on crowd control or riot abatement duty. Is that going to be part of the mission of this particular brigade?" I should have said battalion rather than brigade. "As distinct from the duties of the other joint task forces, am I somehow mixing up two completely different branches of the Army?" And the second question had to do with another story I found, Dr. Stan, concerning a Guard joint task force that was sent to Denver during the Democratic National Convention in order, and I'm quoting from the story now, quote, "to maintain civil order in Denver if necessary. Battalion Commander Lieutenant Colonel Don, I believe it's pronounced Lausarica, Lieutenant Colonel Don Lausarica as follows, if there are violent demonstrations, these National Guard soldiers will have to protect people and businesses from protests that could get out of hand." Now, the most interesting part of that story, Dr. Stan, and this is something which is very disturbing to me, was that the Joint Task Force from the National Guard provided satellite imagery to Denver police and other law enforcement agencies during the convention. They were providing satellite imagery to the riot police, or the people who were giving orders to the riot police, as well as the Secret Service, the FBI, heaven only knows what other alphabet soup agencies and three-letter agencies were involved. But you're using, in other words, the ultra-sophisticated, cutting-edge military technology in order to provide guidance to law enforcement, which is in the business of riot control and crowd control. And there weren't riots in Denver. There were protests in Denver. But there were incidents in Denver where you had peaceful protesters who were on public streets, who were not threatening property or disturbing public order, who were encompassed by large riot-equipped police who then slowly encircled them and slowly marched them into a given area and then arrested them en masse and took them to a large holding facility where they were put in cells that were pretty much the same modular confinement facilities that you find in Guantanamo and elsewhere.
But I think you have to understand, of course, that these people do not believe in the Constitution, which
yeah.
guarantees, of course, you have the right to peacefully assemble and demonstrate, and redress your grievances. They don't want the Constitution. They don't believe in the First Amendment. They don't believe in freedom. They want control, and this is what it's all about. We don't want anybody getting out of control and demonstrating at the political conventions, and we're simply going to lock you up if you try to, go along with your First Amendment rights. And this, indeed, is frightening. And where is the outcry from our media here that's supposedly so concerned about freedom?
That's the thing that really sticks in my teeth here, is that if there's one thing that you would think the media would find sacrosanct, it is the right to express your political views through writing, through speech, through organized protests, the right to petition your elected representatives. In Denver and in St. Paul, in keeping with customs of recent vintage, you had these so-called free speech zones set up. And the free speech zones, of course, were remote from any of the activity having to do with the conventions. Just as in any presidential visit now, you have free speech zones set up where protesters can go out and mingle and speak to each other and, I guess, express their views among themselves at a strict and distant reserve away from the actual event involving the president. And I've adverted to this before, but I think it's worth talking about it again. When we had George W. Bush inflict himself on Appleton, Wisconsin, on a couple of occasions in 2004, I got to see firsthand how some of this operated. I happened to be at the airport when Air Force One was en route, and they had to shut down the entire airspace, and I had a friend flying in on a private plane from New York at the time, and I had to go through a really exceptionally rigorous security procedure in order to collect him, then take him back to his hotel, and then he had to leave under a certain deadline because otherwise they were not going to let him fly because they had to shut down the entire airspace over the entire state. But as we drove in, I noticed this is the day before, actually the same day, but it was many, many hours before the arrival of the presidential entourage. They had already landed a large C-130 carrying an entire land fleet of vehicles. They had identical, interchangeable black SUVs with the windows tinted opaquely so you couldn't see the occupants inside. But on the way in from the Outagamie County Airport, which is a couple of miles outside the actual town of Appleton, I noticed that they were setting up sniper positions on these little rises. This is on the outskirts of the town near the airport. They were already putting in the sniper emplacements, you know, two-man teams, a spotter and a shooter. And then as I talked with other people and took a look at some of the preparations downtown, on the top of many of the major buildings, you had these people once again, these two-man teams set up on top of the buildings, ready to draw down and kill anybody who seemed to be suspicious. The main streets were closed down for the exclusive use of the presidential parade. There was a free speech zone established about 5 miles away from the main street of Appleton, Wisconsin. So people were perfectly free to protest as long as they couldn't be seen by anybody who was anywhere near the president, couldn't be seen by the president himself. That's the way speech is regulated and rationed in this country. It's completely unconstitutional. But once again, as you point out, Dr. Stan, why should these people scruple over the wholesale violation of constitutionally protected rights and any of the other guarantees of the Bill of Rights when they don't believe that we are of the same material as they? Their religious views dictate that they are somehow made of finer or more elevated stuff than the rest of us, and they have been anointed by history in order to rule over us in any way that they see fit. And it's not a partisan issue. If you can take a look at the way that the Barack Obama campaign is starting to pursue, even now, before this guy is elected president, assuming that ever happens, they're already starting to issue threats against television stations and individual activists who produce and air advertisements critical of Barack Obama and his position. They've sent warning letters to television stations in Chicago and Missouri. They have issued threats against individual activists that under provisions of a law that was written by John McCain regulating speech during campaign season, that they will seek law enforcement action to prosecute, to arrest and try and imprison, if possible, people who issue advertisements critical of Barack Obama.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, William, that's frightening. You've got 3 minutes to go ahead and finish up the program.
Yeah. It's just so important, as you always remind us, Dr. Stan, to remember that at the root of all this, at the base of it, we're dealing with a religious struggle. It's a spiritual struggle because it involves things that are beyond the capacity of our physical senses to register or to understand. But it's a tangible religious struggle in the sense that there are people who worship themselves, who worship the creature rather than the creator. And as a result, they are people who look upon the rest of us as means to the ends that they aspire to. And people who have that mindset will not have any compunctions about taking from us everything that we have, everything that we've earned, taking everything that we have been given by our Creator, including our lives, in numbers suitable to the whims of those who rule us in order to accomplish whatever it is that they lay upon their own hearts. And once again, just because we are brought up in this country, this blessed land, this uniquely blessed land, we shouldn't believe that by virtue of that fact we have any happy immunity against the fate that has befallen other countries and other civilizations that have ignored or rebelled against God's laws. God's laws, of course, have to do with what James called in the Epistle of James near the end of the New Testament, the perfect law of liberty. We forsake that at our peril.
Amen to that. And, of course, freedom is something very, very special. We've enjoyed it here. People don't understand how important freedom is. It is very, very rare in throughout all history where men have lived where the power of government over their lives has been restricted, where you did not have to fear the court. You did not have to fear the, banging on the door at midnight, at nighttime. You did not have to fear that the people would be coming for you wearing black uniforms, but believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they're issuing these black uniforms to many groups here in this country. We're moving away from freedom. We're moving towards a society that is constantly monitored. Why do you think they're putting up all these video cameras every place? Why do you think, of course, that they suspended the Posse Comitatus Act? Why do you think, of course, that they will not allow demonstrations? Why are they using the military against American citizens when this is a total contradiction to our traditions here? You've got about 30 seconds to wrap up the program, William.
All right. If anybody in your listening audience is interested in reading my blog, go to willgrigg.com. On the right-hand side of that page, you'll find links, including at the top of that list, a link to my blog, Pro Libertate. And also, if you're interested in getting my book, Liberty and Eclipse, please go to Radio Liberty. They have it available for sale. Or look for it at Amazon.com.
Okay, and fine. And, Chris, how would people reach you if you didn't have a computer?
If they don't have a computer, my mailing address is 1318 3rd Avenue South, Payette, Idaho, 83661.
All right, fine. This is Dr. Stan. One more time, would you mind putting your address out there, William? Somebody had called in, wanted to know how to get hold of you. If they didn't have a computer, you want to get that address out one more time.
Okay, it's 1318 1318 3rd Avenue South, Payette, Idaho, 83661.
83661. And so if anybody didn't get that, they can always contact us. And William, thank you so very much. As always, it's a pleasure to have you with us. We'll look forward to talking to you again this next week. We're living at one of the most exciting times in our nation's history. Good night. God bless.
God bless.
Okay, this is William Grigg. I hope you enjoy him. I always enjoy him. He's ordinarily with us in this time slot on Friday. And listen to what William has to say. He's certainly one of the best and our most articulate observers in our nation today, which is why we're really pleased to have him. Well, this is the time I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We do have a few advertisers, but, I mean, we have tremendous expense. We are on almost 60 outlets, over 60 outlets every single week. And believe me, you have to pay for most of them, and it is extremely expensive. And it's just simply, I believe, by God's will that we're able to hang on, but we could use your help. And so if you're moved to want to help us, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. We hope, of course, you'll get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and understand the spiritual nature of the war. We hope, of course, you'll get my talk on the forbidden secret and the secret knowledge, and then the syllabus that goes with the forbidden secret. You need to get our syllabus and four tape set, our syllabus and DVD on the planned police state, because we go into all the legislation that has been enacted in preparation for a dictatorship in America. And people say it could never happen here, could never happen here. And I would say, why not? If God is just, he's going to bring his judgment on this country that's turned against him. And we have turned against him. And our ministers are certainly not speaking out on this or telling people that they have to return to God. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me just remind you, we are having an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area. It's going to be on the 26th of October, just a little over a month from now, 4 weeks from now. And, of course, we're going to be having Joanna Michelson is going to be talking about her experience working in the supernatural and the miracles she witnessed. We're going to have Russell Blaylock there talking about medicine or medical issues. We're going to have Sydney other people. One of them, of course, is going to be Patrick Wood is going to be here. And Patrick's going to be talking about the financial crisis and what you've got to do to protect yourself. Going to be a great day. Going to start early in the morning. Doors will open at 8 o'clock. We'll be going to 5 or 5:30. So give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You're going to have a reservation because, of course, we're going to be serving lunch. We have to know how many people there and make preparations. And right now I'm very pleased with the number of people signed up. We're hoping if we can double that, why we'll have one of the largest audiences we've ever had. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Monterey Bay is beautiful at that time of year. And then, of course, we hope that you'll go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. You can pull down our DVDs and watch many of them there. You can certainly listen to our radio programs, live, archived, MP3, blog programs. You can listen to our satellite feed. You can listen to Radio Liberty on the satellite nine hours a day. And when you actually get your satellite dish, you don't have to pay anything for it. You can get a lot of other programming, but you can listen to the feed that Joyce Riley and I, Chuck Chrismeyer, Pastor Butch Paw have 24 hours a day. We want you to be able to get the information you're not going to get from the controlled media. And then, of course, we certainly ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and for our ministers, but please pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And then, of course, we want you to tell other people about our program, encourage them to listen. And if they think the ideas are crazy, well, just get them to listen. We'll be till Monday. May the Lord be with you.